Do as she says, Rodriguez. Signal her and lower the longboat. Ferrero was disappointed. He'd wanted to see Edo and wanted to get to know Toranaga better, now that so much of their future was tied to him. He did not believe what Toranaga had said about the means of avoiding war. "We're at war on this monkey's side against Ishido, whether we like it or not. And I don't like it. I'll be sorry not to have Lord Toranaga's company." He bowed politely. Toranaga bowed back and spoke briefly.
"My master thanks you."
To Rodriguez, he added,
"My master says he will reward you for the galley when you return with the black ship."
"I did nothing. It was merely a duty. Please excuse me for not getting up from my chair. My leg, eh?" Rodriguez replied, bowing. "Go with God, Senora."
"Thank you, Captain Pilot. Do thou likewise."
As she groped wearily down the companionway behind Toranaga, she noticed that the bosun Pissarro was commanding the longboat. Her skin crawled, and she almost heaved. She willed the spasm away, thankful that Toranaga had ordered them all off this malodorous vessel.
"A fair wind and safe voyage,"
Ferreira called down to them. He waved once, and the salutation was returned, and then the longboat cast off.
"Stand down when the longboat's back, and that bitch galley's out of sight,"
he ordered the chief gunner. On the quarterdeck, he stopped in front of Rodriguez. He pointed at the galley.
"You'll live to regret keeping him alive."
"That's in the hands of God. The Inglés is an acceptable pilot, if you could pass over his religion, my Captain General."
"I've considered that."
"And?"
"The sooner we're in Macau, the better. Make record time, Rodriguez."
Ferreira went below. Rodriguez's leg was throbbing badly. He took a swig from the grog sack.
"May Ferreira go to hell," he told himself. "But please, God, not until we reach Lisbon."
The wind veered slightly, and a cloud reached for the nimbus of the moon, rain not far off, and dawn streaking the sky. He put his full attention on his ship and her sails and the lie of her. When he was completely satisfied, he watched the longboat, and finally the galley. He sipped more rum, content that his plan had worked so neatly, even the pistol shot that had closed the issue, and content with his decision.
"It was mine to make, and I made it." "Even so, Inglés," he said with a great sadness, "the Captain General is right. With thee, heresy has come to Eden."
Chapter 29.
"Anshin-san?"
"Aye."
Blackthorn swooped out of a deep sleep.
"Here's some food. And cha."
For a moment he could not remember who he was or where he was. Then he recognized his cabin aboard the galley. A shaft of sunlight was piercing the darkness. He felt greatly rested. There was no drumbeat now, and even in his deepest sleep, his senses had told him that the anchor was being lowered, and his ship was safe, near shore, the sea gentle. He saw a maid carrying a tray, Mariko beside her, her arm no longer in a sling, and he was lying in the pilot's bunk, the same that he had used during the Rodriguez voyage from Anjiro village to Osaka, and that was now, in a way, almost as familiar as his own bunk and cabin aboard Erasmus.
"Erasmus. It'll be grand to be back aboard and to see the lads again."
He stretched luxuriously, then took the cup of cha Mariko offered.
"Thank you. That's delicious. How's your arm?"
"Much better, thank you."
Mariko flexed it to show him.
"It was just a flesh wound."
"You're looking better, Mariko-san."
"Yes, I'm better now."
When she'd come back aboard at dawn with Toranaga, she had been near fainting.
"Better to stay aloft," he had told her. "The sickness will leave you faster."
"My master asks why the pistol shot?"
"It was just a game pilots play," he had told her.
My master compliments you on your seamanship.
We were lucky. The moon helped, and the crew were marvellous. Mariko-san, would you ask the captain-san if he knows these waters? Sorry, but tell Torinaga-sama, I can't keep awake much longer. Or can we hove to for an hour or so out to sea? I've got to sleep.
He vaguely remembered her telling him that Torinaga said he could go below, that the captain-san was quite capable, as they would be staying in coastal waters and not going out to sea. Blackthorn stretched again and opened a cabin porthole. A rocky shore was 200-odd yards away.
Where are we?
Off the coast of Totomi province, Anjin-san. Lord Torinaga wanted to swim and to rest the oarsmen for a few hours. We'll be at Anjiro tomorrow.
The fishing village? That's impossible. It's near noon, and at dawn we were off Osaka. That's impossible.
Ah, that was yesterday, Anjin-san. You slept a day and a night, and half another day, she replied. Lord Torinaga said to let you sleep. Now he thinks a swim would be good to wake you up. After food.
Food was two bowls of rice and charcoal-roasted fish with the dark, salt-bitter, vinegar-sweet sauce that she had told him was made from fermented beans.
Thank you, yes. I'd like a swim. Almost 36 hours. No wonder I feel fine.
He took the tray from the maid, ravenous, but he did not eat at once.
Why is she afraid? He asked.
She's not, Anjin-san. Just a little nervous. Please excuse her. She's never seen a foreigner close to before.
Tell her when the moon's full. Barbarians sprout horns, and fire comes out of our mouths like dragons.
Mariko laughed.
I certainly will not.
She pointed to the sea table.
There is tooth powder and a brush and water and fresh towels.
Then said in Latin,
It pleasures me to see thou art well. It is as was related on the march. Thou hast great bravery.
Their eyes locked, and then the moment was allowed to pass. She bowed politely. The maid bowed. The door closed behind them.
Don't think about her, he ordered himself. Think about Torinaga or Anjiro. Why do we stop at Anjiro tomorrow? To offload Yabu? Good riddance. Omi will be at Anjiro. What about Omi? Why not ask Torinaga for Omi's head? He owes you a favor or two. Why not ask to fight Omi-san? How? Oh, with pistols or with swords? You'd have no chance with the sword, and it'd be murder if you had a gun. Better to do nothing and wait. You'll have a chance soon, and then you'll be revenged on both of them. You bask in Torinaga's favor now. Be patient. Ask yourself what you need from him. Soon we'll be in Edo, so you've not much time. What about Torinaga?
Blackthorn was using the chopsticks, as he had seen the men in the prison use them, lifting the bowl of rice to his lips and pushing the tacky rice from the lip of the bowl into his mouth with the sticks. The pieces of fish were more difficult. He was still not deft enough, so he used his fingers, glad to eat alone, knowing that to eat with his fingers would be very impolite in front of Mariko or Torinaga or any Japanese. When every morsel was gone, he was still famished.
Got to get more food, he said aloud. Jesus God in heaven! I'd like some fresh bread and fried eggs and butter and cheese.
He came on deck. Almost everyone was naked. Some of the men were drying themselves, others sunbathing, and a few were leaping overboard. In the sea alongside the ship, samurai and seamen were swimming or splashing as children would.
Konnichiwa, Anjin-san.
Konnichiwa, Torinaga-sama, he said.
Torinaga, quite naked, was coming up the gangway that had been let down to the sea.
Sonata wa oyogutama ka?
He said, motioning at the sea, slapping the water off his belly and his shoulders, warm under the bright sun.
Hai, Torinaga-sama. Domo, Blackthorn said, presuming that he was being asked if he wanted to swim.
Again, Torinaga pointed at the sea and spoke shortly, then called Mariko to interpret. Mariko walked down from the poop deck, shielding her head with a crimson sunshade, her informal white cotton kimono casually belted.
Toranaga-sama says you look very rested, Anjin-san. The water's invigoration.
Invigorating, he said, correcting her politely. Yes.
Ah, thank you. Invigorating. He says, please swim then.
Toranaga was leaning carelessly against the gunwale, wiping the water out of his ears with a small towel. And when his left ear would not clear, he hung his head over and hopped on his left heel until it did. Blackthorn saw that Toranaga was very muscular and very taut, apart from his belly. Ill at ease, very conscious of Mariko, he stripped off his shirt and his codpiece and trousers until he was equally naked.
Lord Toranaga asks if all Englishmen are as hairy as you. The hair so fair?
Some are, he said.
We, our men, don't have hair on their chests or arms like you do. Not very much. He says you've a very good build.
So has he. Please thank him. Blackthorn walked away from her to the head of the gangplank, aware of her and the young woman, Hujiko, who was kneeling on the poop under a yellow parasol, a maid beside her, also watching him. Then, unable to contain his dignity enough to walk naked all the way down to the sea, he dived over the side into the pale blue water. It was a fine dive, and the sea chill reached into him exhilaratingly. The sandy bottom was 3 fathoms down, seaweed waving, multitudes of fish unfrightened by the swimmers. Near the seabed, his plummeting stopped, and he twisted and played with the fish, then surfaced and began a seemingly lazy, easy, but very fast overarm stroke for the shore that Auburn Caradoc had taught him. The small bay was desolate. Many rocks, a tiny pebbled shore, and no sign of life. Mountains climbed 1,000 feet to a blue, measureless sky. He lay on a rock sunning himself. 4 samurai had swum with him and were not far away. They smiled and waved. Later he swam back, and they followed. Toranaga was still watching him. He came up on deck. His clothes were gone. Hujiko and Mariko and 2 maids were still there. One of the maids bowed and offered him a ridiculously small towel, which he took and began to dry himself with, turning uneasily into the gunwale.
I order you to be at ease, he told himself. You're at ease naked in a locked room with Felicity, aren't you? It's only in public when women are around, when she's around, that you're embarrassed. Why? They don't notice nakedness, and that's totally sensible. You're in Japan. You're to do as they do. You will be like them and act like a king.
Lord Toranaga says you swim very well. Would you teach him that stroke?
Mariko was saying. I'd be glad to, he said, and forced himself to turn around and lean as Toranaga was leaning. Mariko was smiling up at him. Looking so pretty, he thought.
The way you dived into the sea, we've never seen that before. We always jump. He wants to learn how to do that.
Now?
Yes, please.
I can teach him. At least I can try.
A maid was holding a cotton kimono for Blackthorn, so gratefully he slipped it on, tying it with the belt. Now, completely relaxed, he explained how to dive, how to tuck your head between your arms and spring up and out, but to beware of belly flopping.
It's best to start from the foot of the gangway and sort of fall in head first to begin with, without jumping or running. That's the way we teach children.
Toranaga listened and asked questions. And then, when he was satisfied, he said through Mariko,
Good. I think I understand.
He walked to the head of the gangway. Before Blackthorn could stop him, Toranaga had launched himself toward the water, 15 feet below. The belly flop was vicious. No one laughed. Toranaga spluttered back to the deck and tried again. Again he landed flat. Other samurai were equally unsuccessful.
It's not easy, Blackthorn said. It took me a long time to learn. Give it a rest, and we'll try again tomorrow.
Lord Toranaga says, tomorrow is tomorrow, Today I will learn how to dive.
Blackthorn put his kimono aside and demonstrated again. Samurai aped him. Again they failed. So did Toranaga. 6 times. After another demonstration dive, Blackthorn scrambled onto the foot of the gangplank and saw Mariko among them, nude, readying to launch herself into space. Her body was exquisite, the bandage on her upper arm fresh.
Wait, Mariko-san. Better to try from here. The first time.
Very well, Anjin-san.
She walked down to him, the tiny crucifix enhancing her nudity. He showed her how to bend and to fall forward into the sea, catching her by the waist to turn her over so that her head went in first. Then Toranaga tried near the waterline and was moderately successful. Mariko tried again, and the touch of her skin warmed Blackthorn, and he clowned momentarily and fell into the water, directing them from there until he had cooled off. Then he ran up to the deck and stood on the gunwale and showed them a dead man's dive, which he thought might be easier, knowing that it was vital for Toranaga to succeed.
But you've got to keep rigid, aye? Like a sword. Then you cannot fail.
He fell outward. The dive was clean, and he trod water and waited. Several samurai came forward, but Toranaga waved them aside. He held up his arms stiffly, his backbone straight. His chest and loins were scarlet from the belly flops. Then he let himself fall forward, as Blackthorn had shown. His head went into the water first, and his legs tumbled over him, but it was a dive, and the first successful dive of any of them, and a roar of approval greeted him when he surfaced. He did it again, this time better. Other men followed, some successful, others not. Then Mariko tried. Blackthorn saw the taut little breasts and tiny waist, flat stomach and curving legs. A flicker of pain went across her face as she lifted her arms above her head. But she held herself like an arrow and fell bravely outward. She speared the water cleanly. Almost no one except him noticed.
That was a fine dive. Really fine, he said, giving her a hand to lift her easily out of the water onto the gangway platform. You should stop now. You might open up the cut on your arm.
Yes, thank you, Anjin-san.
She stood beside him, barely reaching his shoulder, very pleased with herself.
That's a rare sensation, the falling outward and the having to stay stiff, and most of all, the having to dominate your fear. Yes, that was a very rare sensation indeed.
She walked up the companionway and put on the kimono that the maid held out for her. Then, drying her face delicately, she went below.
Christ Jesus, that's much woman, he thought.
That sunset, Toranaga sent for Blackthorn. He was sitting on the poop deck on clean futons near a small charcoal brazier, upon which small pieces of aromatic wood were smoking. They were used to perfume the air and keep away the dust gnats and mosquitoes. His kimono was pressed and neat, and the huge wing-like shoulders of the starched overmantle gave him a formidable presence. Yabu, too, was formally dressed, and Mariko. Ujiko was also there. 20 samurai sat silently on guard. Players were set into stands, and the galley still swung calmly at anchor in the bay.
Sake, Anjin-san.
Domo, Toranaga-sama.
Blackthorn bowed and accepted the small cup from Ujiko, lifted it in toast to Toranaga, and drained it. The cup was immediately refilled. Blackthorn was wearing a brown uniform kimono, and it felt easier and freer than his own clothes.
Lord Toranaga, since we're staying here tonight, tomorrow we arrive at Anjiro. He would like to hear more about your country and the world outside.
Of course. What would he like to know? It's a lovely night, isn't it?
Blackthorn settled himself comfortably, aware of her femininity. Too aware.
Strange. I'm more conscious of her now that she's clothed than when she wore nothing.
Yes, very. Soon it will be humid, Anjin-san. Summer is not a good time.
She told Toranaga what she had said.
My master says to tell you that Edo is marshy. The mosquitoes are bad in summer, but spring and autumn are beautiful. Yes, truly the birth and the dying seasons of the year are beautiful.
England's temperate. The winter's bad, perhaps one winter in seven. And the summer also. Famine about once in 6 years. Though sometimes we get 2 bad years in a row.
We have famine too. All famine is bad. How is it in your country now?
We've had bad harvests 3 years in the last 10 years, and no sun to ripen the corn. But that's the hand of the Almighty. Now England's very strong. We're prosperous. Our people work hard. We make all our own cloth, all arms, most of the woolen cloth of Europe. A few silks come from France, but the quality's poor, and they're only for the very rich.
Blackthorn decided not to tell them about plague or the riots or insurrections caused by enclosing the common lands, and the drift of peasants to towns and to cities. Instead, he told them about the good kings and queens, sound leaders and wise parliaments, and successful wars.
Lord Torrenaga wants to be quite clear. You claim only sea power protects you from Spain and Portugal?
Yes, that alone. Command of our seas keeps us free. You're an island nation too, just like us. Without command of your seas, aren't you also defenseless against an outside enemy?
My master agrees with you.
Ah, you've been invaded too?
Blackthorn saw a slight frown as she turned to Torrenaga, and he reminded himself to confine himself to answers and not questions. When she spoke to him again, she was more grave.
Lord Torrenaga says I should answer your question, Anjin-san. Yes, we've been invaded twice. More than 300 years ago, it would be 1274 of your counting, the Mongols of Kublai Khan, who had just conquered China and Korea, came against us when we refused to submit to his authority. A few thousand men landed in Kyushu, but our samurai managed to contain them, and after a while the enemy withdrew. But 7 years later, they came again. This time, the invasion consisted of almost 1,000 Chinese and Korean ships with 200,000 enemy troops. Mongols, Chinese, and Korean. Mostly cavalry. In all Chinese history, this was the greatest invasion force ever assembled. We were helpless against such an overwhelming force, Anjin-san. Again, they began to land at Hakata Bay in Kyushu. But before they could deploy all their armies, a great wind, a typhoon, came out of the south and destroyed the fleet and all it contained. Those left ashore were quickly killed. It was a kamikaze, a divine wind, Anjin-san, she said with complete belief. A kamikaze sent by the gods to protect this land of the gods from the foreign invader. The Mongols never came back, and after 80 years or so, their dynasty, the Qin, was thrown out of China.
Mariko added with great satisfaction.
The gods protected us against them. The gods will always protect us against invasion. After all, this is their land, ne?
Blackthorn thought about the huge numbers of ships and men in the invasion. It made the Spanish Armada against England seem insignificant.
We were helped by a storm too, Senora, he said with equal seriousness. Many believe it was also sent by God. Certainly it was a miracle. And who knows, perhaps it was.
He glanced at the brazier as a coal spluttered and flames danced. Then he said,
The Mongols nearly engulfed us in Europe, too.
He told her how the hordes of Genghis Khan, Kublai Khan's grandfather, had come almost to the gates of Vienna before his onslaught was stopped and then turned back. Mountains of skulls in his wake.
People in those days believed Genghis Khan and his soldiers were sent by God to punish the world for its sins.
Lord Torrenaga says he was just a barbarian who was immensely good at war.
Yes, even so, in England we bless our luck, we're an island. We thank God for that, and the Channel, and our navy. With China so close and so powerful, and with you and China at war, I'm surprised you don't have a big navy. Aren't you afraid of another attack?
Mariko did not answer,
but translated for Toranaga what had been said. When she had finished, Toranaga spoke to Yabu, who nodded and answered, equally serious. The two men conversed for a while. Mariko answered another question from Toranaga, then spoke to Blackthorn once more.
To control your seas, Anjin-san, how many ships do you need?
I don't know exactly, but now the Queen's got perhaps 150 ships of the line. Those are ships built only for war.
My master asks, how many ships a year does your queen build?
20 to 30 warships, the best and fleetest in the world. But the ships are usually built by private groups of merchants and then sold to the crown.
For a profit?
Blackthorn remembered samurai opinion of profit and money.
The queen generously gives more than the actual cost to encourage research and new styles of building. Without royal favor, this would hardly be possible. For example, Erasmus, my ship, is a new class, an English design built under license in Holland.
Could you build such a ship here?
Yes, if I had carpenters, interpreters, and all the materials and time. First, I'd have to build a smaller vessel. I've never built one entirely by myself before, so I'd have to experiment. Of course, he added, attempting to contain his excitement as the idea developed. Of course, if Lord Toranaga wanted a ship, or ships, perhaps a trade could be arranged. Perhaps he could order a number of warships to be built in England. We could sail them out here for him, rigged as he'd want, and armed as he'd want.
Mariko translated. Toranaga's interest heightened. So did Yabu's.
He asks, can our sailors be trained to sail such ships?
Certainly, given time. We could arrange for the sailing masters, or one of them, to stay in your waters for a year. Then he could set up a training program for you. In a few years, you'd have your own navy. A modern navy, second to none.
Mariko spoke for a time. Toranaga questioned her again searchingly, and so did Yabu.
Yabu-san asks, second to none?
Yes, better than anything the Spaniards would have, or the Portuguese.
A silence gathered. Toranaga was evidently swept by the idea, though he tried to hide it.
My master asks, are you sure this could be arranged?
Yes.
How long would it take?
2 years for me to sail home, 2 years to build a ship or ships, 2 to sail back. Half the cost would have to be paid in advance, the remainder on delivery.
Toranaga thoughtfully leaned forward and put some more aromatic wood on the brazier. They all watched him and waited. Then he talked with Yabu at length. Mariko did not translate what was being said, and Blackthorn knew better than to ask, as much as he would dearly have liked to be party to the conversation. He studied them all, even the girl Hujiko, who also listened attentively, but he could gather nothing from any of them. He knew this was a brilliant idea that could bring immense profit and guarantee his safe passage back to England.
Anjin-san, how many ships could you sail out?
A flotilla of 5 ships at a time would be best. You could expect to lose at least one ship through storm, tempest, or Spanish-Portuguese interference. I'm sure they'd try very hard to prevent your having warships. In 10 years, Lord Toranaga could have a navy of 15 to 20 ships.
He let her translate that, then he continued slowly.
The first flotilla could bring you master carpenters, shipwrights, gunners, seamen, and masters. In 10 to 15 years, England could supply Lord Toranaga with 30 modern warships, more than enough to dominate your home waters. And by that time, if you wanted, you could possibly be building your own replacements here. We'll...
He was going to say sell, but changed the word.
My queen would be honored to help you form your own navy. And yes, if you wish, we'll train it and provision it. Oh, yes, he thought exultantly, as the final embellishment to the plan dropped into place. And we'll officer it, and provide the admiral, and the queen'll offer you a binding alliance. Good for you, and good for us, which will be part of the trade. And then together, friend Toranaga, we will harry the Spaniard and Portuguese dog out of these seas and own them forever.
This could be the greatest single trading pact any nation has ever made, he thought gleefully. And with an Anglo-Japanese fleet clearing these seas, we English will dominate the Japan-China silk trade. Then it'll be millions every year. If I can pull this off, I'll turn the course of history. I'll have riches and honors beyond my dream. I'll become an ancestor. And to become an ancestor is just about the best thing a man can try to do, even though he fails in the trying.
My master says, it's a pity you don't speak our language.
Yes, but I'm sure you're interpreting perfectly.
He says that not as a criticism of me, Anjin-san, but as an observation. It's true. It would be much better for my lord to talk direct, as I can talk to you.
Do you have any dictionaries, Mariko-san? And grammars? Portuguese-Japanese or Latin-Japanese grammars? If Lord Toranaga could help me with books and teachers, I'd try to learn your tongue.
We have no such books.
But the Jesuits have. You said so yourself.
Ah!
She spoke to Toranaga, and Blackthorn saw both Yabu's and Toranaga's eyes light up, and smiles spread over their faces.
My master says you will be helped, Anjin-san.
At Toranaga's orders, Fujiko gave Blackthorn and Yabu more sake. Toranaga drank only cha, as did Mariko.
Unable to contain himself, Blackthorn said, What does he say to my suggestion? What's his answer?
Anjin-san, it would be better to be patient. He will answer in his own time.
Please ask him now.
Reluctantly, Mariko turned to Toranaga.
Please excuse me, sir, but the Anjin-san asks with great deference, What do you think of his plan? He very humbly and most politely requests an answer.
You'll have my answer in good time.
Mariko said to Blackthorn,
My master says he will consider your plan and think carefully about what you have said. He asks you to be patient.
Domo, Toranaga-sama. I'm going to bed now. We'll leave at dawn.
Toranaga got up. Everyone followed him below, except Blackthorn. Blackthorn was left with the knight. At first promise of dawn, Toranaga released four of the carrier pigeons that had been sent to the ship with the main baggage when the ship was being prepared. The birds circled twice, then broke off, two homing for Osaka, two for Edo. The cipher message to Kiritsubo was an order to be passed on to Hiromatsu, that they should all attempt to leave peacefully at once. Should they be prevented, they were to lock themselves in. The moment the door was forced, they were to set fire to that part of the castle and to commit seppuku. The cipher to Hisan Sudara in Edo told that he had escaped, was safe, and ordered him to continue secret preparations for war.
Get to sea, Captain.
Yes, Lord.
By noon, they had crossed the bight between Totomi and Izu provinces and were off Cape Ito, the southernmost point of the Izu Peninsula. The wind was fair, the swell modest, and the single mainsail helped their passage. Then, close by shore in a deep channel between the mainland and some small rock islands, when they had turned north, there was an ominous rumbling ashore. All oars ceased.
What in the name of Christ?
Blackthorn's eyes were riveted shoreward. Suddenly, a huge fissure snaked up the cliffs, and a million tons of rock avalanched into the sea. The waters seemed to boil for a moment. A small wave came out to the galley, then passed by. The avalanche ceased. Again the rumbling, deeper now and more growling, but farther off. Rocks dribbled from the cliffs. Everyone listened intently and waited, watching the cliff face. Sounds of gulls, of surf and wind. Then Toranaga motioned to the drummaster, who picked up the beat once more. The oars began. Life on the ship became normal.
What was that? Blackthorn said.
Just an earthquake.
Mariko was perplexed.
You don't have earthquakes?
No. Never. I've never seen one before.
Oh, we have them frequently, Anjin-san. That was nothing. Just a small one. The main shock center would be somewhere else, even out to sea. Or perhaps this one was just a little one here, all by itself. You were lucky to witness a small one.
It was as though the whole earth was shaking. I could have sworn I saw. I've heard about tremors. In the Holy Land and the Ottomans, they have them sometimes. Jesus!
He exhaled, his heart still thumping roughly.
I could have sworn I saw that whole cliff shake.
Oh, it did, Anjin-san. When you're on land, it's the most terrible feeling in the whole world. There's no warning, Anjin-san. The tremors come in waves, sometimes sideways, sometimes up and down, sometimes three or four shakes quickly. Sometimes a small one, followed by a greater one a day later. There's no pattern. The worst that I was in was at night, 6 years ago near Osaka, the third day of the month of the falling leaves. Our house collapsed on us, Anjin-san. We weren't hurt, my son and I. We dug ourselves out. The shocks went on for a week or more, some bad, some very bad. The Taiko's great new castle at Fujimi was totally destroyed. Hundreds of thousands of people were lost in that earthquake and in the fires that followed. That's the greatest danger, Anjin-san, the fires that always follow. Our towns and cities and villages die so easily. Sometimes there is a bad earthquake far out to sea, and legend has it that this causes the birth of the great waves. They are 10 or 20 feet high. There is never a warning, and they have no season. A great wave just comes out of the sea to our shores and sweeps inland. Cities can vanish. Edo was half destroyed some years ago by such a wave.
This is normal for you? Every year?
Oh, yes. Every year in this land of the gods, we have earth tremors, and fires, and flood, and great waves, and the monster storms, the typhoons. Nature is very strong with us.
Tears gathered at the corners of her eyes.
Perhaps that is why we love life so much, Anjin-san. You see, we have to. Death is part of our air and sea and earth. You should know, Anjin-san, in this land of tears, death is our heritage.
Part 3. Chapter 30.
You're certain everything's ready, Muda?
Yes, Omi-san. Yes, I think so. We followed your orders exactly.
And Igarashi-san's?
Nothing had better go wrong, or there'll be another headman by sunset.
Igarashi, Yabu's chief lieutenant, told him with great sourness, his one eye bloodshot from lack of sleep. He'd arrived yesterday from Edo with the first contingent of samurai and with specific instructions. Mura did not reply. Just nodded deferentially and kept his eyes on the ground. They were standing on the foreshore, near the jetty, in front of the kneeling rows of silent, overawed, and equally exhausted villagers. Every man, woman, and child, except for the bedridden, waiting for the galley to arrive. All wore their best clothes. Faces were scrubbed, the whole village swept and sparkling and made wholesome, as though this were the day before New Year, when, by ancient custom, all the empire was cleaned. Fishing boats were meticulously marshalled, nets tidy, ropes coiled. Even the beach along the bay had been raked.
Nothing will go wrong, Igarashi-san,
Omi said. He had had little sleep this last week, ever since Yabu's orders had come from Osaka by one of Toranaga's carrier pigeons. At once he had mobilized the village and every able-bodied man within 20 li to prepare Anjiro for the arrival of the samurai and Yabu. And now that Igarashi had whispered the very private secret, for his ears only, that the great daimyo Toranaga was accompanying his uncle and had successfully escaped Ishido's trap, he was more than pleased he had expended so much money.
There's no need for you to worry, Igarashi-san. This is my fief and my responsibility.
I agree. Yes, it is.
Igarashi waved Mura contemptuously away, and then he added quietly,
You're responsible, but without offense, I tell you, you've never seen our master when something goes wrong. If we've forgotten anything, or these dung-eaters haven't done what they're supposed to, our master will make your whole fief and those to the north and south into manure heaps before sunset tomorrow.
He strode back to the head of his men.
This morning, the final companies of samurai had ridden in from Mishima, Yabu's capital city to the north. Now they, too, with all the others, were drawn up in packed military formation on the foreshore, in the square, and on the hillside, their banners waving with the slight breeze, upright spears glinting in the sun. 3,000 samurai, the elite of Yabu's army. 500 cavalry. Omi was not afraid. He had done everything it was possible to do, and had personally checked everything that could be checked. If something went wrong, then that was just karma.
But nothing is going to go wrong, he thought excitedly.
500 koku had been spent or was committed on the preparations, more than his entire year's income before Yabu had increased his fief. He had been staggered by the amount, but Midori, his wife, had said they should spend lavishly, that the cost was minuscule compared to the honor that Lord Yabu was doing him.
And with Lord Torinaga here, who knows what great opportunities you'll have,
she had whispered.
She's so right, Omi thought proudly.
He rechecked the shore and the village square. Everything seemed perfect. Midori and his mother were waiting under the awning that had been prepared to receive Yabu and his guest, Torinaga. Omi noticed that his mother's tongue was wagging, and he wished that Midori could be spared its constant lash. He straightened a fold in his already impeccable kimono, and adjusted his swords, and looked seaward.
Listen, Mura-san!
Uo, the fisherman, was whispering cautiously. He was one of the five village elders, and they were kneeling with Mura in front of the rest.
You know, I'm so frightened. If I pissed, I'd piss dust.
Then don't, old friend. Mura suppressed his smile. Uo was a broad-shouldered, rock-like man with vast hands and broken nose, and he wore a pained expression.
I won't, but I think I'm going to fart.
Uo was famous for his humor, and for his courage, and for the quantity of his wind. Last year, when they had had the wind-breaking contest with the village to the north, he had been champion of champions, and had brought great honor to Anjiro.
Perhaps you'd better not.
Haru, a short, wizened fisherman, chortled.
One of the shitheads might get jealous.
Mura hissed.
You're ordered not to call samurai that while even one's near the village. Oko,
he was thinking wearily.
I hope we've not forgotten anything.
He glanced up at the mountainside, at the bamboo stockade surrounding the temporary fortress they'd constructed with such speed and sweat. 300 men digging and building and carrying. The other new house had been easier. It was on the knoll just below Omi's house, and he could see it, smaller than Omi's but with a tiled roof, a makeshift garden, and a small bathhouse.
I suppose Omi will move there and give Lord Yabu his, Mura thought.
He looked back at the headland where the galley would appear any moment now. Soon Yabu would step ashore, and then they were all in the hands of the gods, all Kami, God the Father, his blessed Son, and the blessed Madonna.
Oko. Blessed Madonna, protect us. Would it be too much to ask to put thy great eye on this special village of Anjiro, just for the next few days? We need special favor to protect us from our lord and master. Oh, yes. I will light 50 candles, and my sons will definitely be brought up in the true faith,
Mura promised. Today, Mura was very glad to be a Christian. He could intercede with the one God, and that was an added protection for his village. He'd become a Christian in his youth because his own liege lord had been converted and had at once ordered all his followers to become Christians. And when, 20 years ago, this lord was killed fighting for Torinaga against the Taiko, Mura had remained Christian to honor his memory.
A good soldier has but one master, he thought. One real master.
Ninjin, a round-faced man with very buck teeth, was especially agitated by the presence of so many samurai.
Mura-san, so sorry, but it's dangerous what you've done. Terrible, ne? That little earthquake this morning, it was a sign from the gods, an omen. You've made a terrible mistake, Mura-san.
What is done, Ninjin. Forget about it.
How can I? It's in my cellar, and some of it's in your cellar. I've plenty myself,
Uo said, no longer smiling.
Nothing's anywhere. Nothing, old friends,
Mura said cautiously.
Nothing exists.
On his orders, 30 koku of rice had been stolen over the last few days from the samurai commissariat and was now secreted around the village, along with other stores and equipment. And weapons.
Not weapons, Uo had protested. Rice, yes, but not weapons.
War is coming.
It's against the law to have weapons,
Ninjin had wailed. Mura snorted.
That's a new law, barely 12 years old. Before that, we could have any weapons we wanted, and we weren't tied to the village. We could go where we wanted, be what we wanted. We could be peasant soldier, fisherman, merchant, even samurai. Some could. You know it's the truth.
Yes, but now it's different, Mura-san. Different. The Taiko ordered it to be different.
Soon it'll be as it's always been. We'll be soldiering again.
Then let's wait, Ninjin had pleaded. Please. Now it's against the law. If the law changes, that's karma. The Taiko made the law. No weapons. None. On pain of instant death.
Open your eyes, all of you. The Taiko's dead. And I tell you, soon Omi-san'll need trained men, and most of us have warred, ne? We've fished and warred, all in their season. Isn't that true?
Yes, Mura-san,
Uo had agreed through his fear.
Before the Taiko, we weren't tied. They'll catch us. They have to catch us.
Ninjin had wept.
They'll have no mercy. They'll boil us like they boiled the barbarian.
Shut up about the barbarian. Listen, friends,
Mura had said.
We'll never get such a chance again. It's sent by God, or by the gods. We must take every knife, arrow, spear, sword, musket, shield, bow, we can. The samurai'll think other samurai have stolen them. Haven't the shitheads come from all over Izu? And what samurai really trusts another? We must take back our rights to war, ne? My father was killed in battle. So was his, and his. Ninjin, how many battles have you been in? Dozens, ne? Uo, what about you? 20? 30? More. Didn't I serve with the Taiko? Curse his memory. Ah, before he became Taiko, he was a man. That's the truth. Then something changed him, ne? Ninjin, don't forget that Mura-san is headman. And we shouldn't forget his father was headman too. If the headman says weapons, then weapons it has to be.
Now, kneeling in the sun, Mura was convinced that he had done correctly. That this new war would last forever, and their world would be again as it had always been. The village would be here, and the boats and some villagers. Because all men, peasant, daimyo, samurai, even the Atta, all men had to eat, and the fish were waiting in the sea. So the soldier villagers would take time out from war from time to time, as always, and they would launch their boats.
Look,
Uo said, and pointed involuntarily in the sudden hush. The galley was rounding the headland. Ujiko was kneeling abjectly in front of Toranaga in the main cabin that he had used during the voyage, and they were alone.
I beg you, sir, she pleaded. Take this sentence off my head.
It's not a sentence. It's an order.
I will obey, of course, but I cannot do...
Cannot?
Toranaga flared.
How dare you argue? I tell you you're to be the pilot's consort, and you have the impertinence to argue?
I apologize, sir, with all my heart,
Fujiko said quickly, the words gushing.
That was not meant as an argument. I only wanted to say that I cannot do this in the way that you wished. I beg you to understand. Forgive me, sir, but it's not possible to be happy, or to pretend happiness.
She bowed her head to the futon.
I humbly beseech you to allow me to commit seppuku.
I've said before, I do not approve of senseless death. I have a use for you.
Please, sire, I wish to die. I humbly beg you, I wish to join my husband and my son.
Toranaga's voice slashed at her, drowning the sounds of the galley.
I've already refused you that honor. You don't merit it yet. And it's only because of your grandfather, because Lord Hiromatsu's my oldest friend, that I've listened patiently to your ill-mannered mouthing so far. Enough of this nonsense, woman. Stop acting like a dung-headed peasant.
I humbly beg permission to cut off my hair and become a nun. Buddha will...
No! I've given you an order. Obey it!
Obey?
She said, not looking up, her face stark. Then half to herself.
I thought I was ordered to Edo.
You were ordered to this vessel. You forget your position. You forget your heritage. You forget your duty. You forget your duty! I'm disgusted with you. Go and get ready.
I want to die. Please let me join them, sire.
Your husband was born samurai by mistake. He was malformed, so his offspring would be equally malformed. That fool almost ruined me. Join them? What nonsense. You're forbidden to commit seppuku. Now get out.
But she did not move.
Perhaps I'd better send you to the Eta, to one of their houses. Perhaps that'd remind you of your manners and your duty.
A shudder racked her, but she hissed back defiantly.
At least they'd be Japanese.
I am your liege lord. You will do as I order.
Fujiko hesitated. Then she shrugged.
Yes, lord. I apologize for my ill manners.
She placed her hands flat on the futon and bowed her head low, her voice penitent. But in her heart she was not persuaded, and he knew and she knew what she intended to do.
Sire, I sincerely apologize for disturbing you, for destroying your wa, your harmony, and for my bad manners. You were right, I was wrong.
She got up and went quietly to the door of the cabin.
If I grant you what you wish, Toranaga said, will you, in return, do what I want, with all your heart?
Slowly she looked back.
For how long, sire? I beg to ask, for how long must I be consort to the barbarian?
A year.
She turned away and reached for the door handle. Toranaga said,
half a year.
Fujiko's hand stopped. Trembling, she leaned her head against the door.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Toranaga got to his feet and went to the door. She opened it for him and bowed him through and closed it after him. Then the tears came silently. She was samurai. Toranaga came on deck feeling very pleased with himself. He had achieved what he wanted with a minimum of trouble. If the girl had been pressed too far, she would have disobeyed and taken her own life without permission. But now she would try hard to please, and it was important that she become the pilot's consort happily, at least outwardly so, and 6 months would be more than enough.
Women are much easier to deal with than men,
he thought contentedly.
So much easier, in certain things.
Then he saw Yabu samurai massed around the bay, and his sense of well-being vanished.
Welcome to Isu, Lord Toranaga,
Yabu said.
I ordered a few men here to act as escort for you. Good.
The galley was still 200 yards from the dock, approaching neatly, and they could see Ome and Igarashi in the futons and the awning.
Everything's been done as we discussed in Osaka, Yabu was saying. But why not stay with me for a few days? I'd be honored. And it would prove very useful. You could approve the choice of the 250 men for the musket regiment, and meet their commander.
Nothing would please me more, but I must get to Edo as quickly as possible, Yabu-san.
2 or 3 days. Please, a few days free from worry would be good for you, ne? Your health is important to me, to all your allies. Some rest, good food, and hunting.
Toranaga was desperately seeking a solution. To stay here with only 50 guards was unthinkable. He would be totally in Yabu's power, and that would be worse than his situation at Osaka. At least Ishida was predictable and bound by certain rules. But Yabu?
Yabu's as treacherous as a shark, and you don't tempt sharks, he told himself. And never in their home waters. And never with your own life.
He knew that the bargain he had made with Yabu at Osaka had as much substance as the weight of their urine when it had reached the ground. Once Yabu believed he could get better concessions from Ishido. And Yabu's presenting Toranaga's head on a wooden platter to Ishido would get Yabu immediately far more than Toranaga was prepared to offer.
Kill him or go ashore?
Those were the choices.
You're too kind, he said, but I must get to Edo. I never thought Yabu would have time to gather so many men here. Has he broken our code?
Please allow me to insist, Toranaga-sama. The hunting's very good nearby. I've falcons with my men. A little hunting after being confined at Osaka would be good, eh?
Yes, it would be good to hunt today. I regret losing my falcons, though.
But they're not lost. Surely Hiromatsu will bring them with him to Edo.
I ordered him to release them once we were safely away. By the time they'd have reached Edo, they would have been out of training and tainted. It's one of my few rules, only to fly the falcons that I've trained, and to allow them no other master. That way, they make only my mistakes.
It's a good rule. I'd like to hear the others. Perhaps over food tonight?
I need this shark, Toranaga thought bitterly. To kill him now is premature.
Two ropes sailed ashore to be caught and secured. The ropes tightened and screeched under the strain, and the galley swung alongside deftly. Oars were shipped. The gangway slid into place, and then Yabu stood at its head. At once, the masked samurai shouted their battle cry in unison.
Kashigi! Kashigi!
And the roar that they made sent the gulls cawing and mewing into the sky. As one man, the samurai bowed. Yabu bowed back, then turned to Toranaga and beckoned him expansively.
Let's go ashore.
Toranaga looked out over the masked samurai, over the villagers prostrate in the dust, and he asked himself,
Is this where I die by the sword, as the astrologer has foretold? Certainly the first part has come to pass. My name is now written on Osaka walls.
He put that thought aside. At the head of the gangway he called out loudly and imperiously to his 50 samurai, who now wore brown uniform kimonos as he did.
All of you, stay here! You, captain, you will prepare for instant departure. Mariko-san, you will be staying in Anjiro for 3 days. Take the pilot and Hujiko-san ashore at once and wait for me in the square.
Then he faced the shore and, to Yabu's amazement, increased the force of his voice.
Now, Yabu-san, I will inspect your regiments.
At once he walked past him and stomped down the gangplank with all the easy, confident arrogance of the fighting general he was. No general had ever won more battles, and no one was more cunning except the Taiko, and he was dead. No general had fought more battles, or was ever more patient, or had lost so few men, and he had never been defeated. A rustle of astonishment sped throughout the shore as he was recognized. This inspection was completely unexpected. His name was passed from mouth to mouth, and the strength of the whispering, the awe that it generated, gratified him. He felt Yabu following, but did not look back.
Ah, Igarashi-san,
he said with a geniality he did not feel.
It's good to see you. Come along. We'll inspect your men together.
Yes, Lord.
And you must be Kashigi Omi-san. Your father's an old comrade in arms of mine. You follow, too.
Yes, Lord,
Omi replied, his size increasing with the honor being done to him.
Thank you.
Toranaga set a brisk pace. He'd taken them with him to prevent them from talking privately with Yabu for the moment, knowing that his